Michael Explains, where I invite you to join the science teaching conversation with me about molecular tour of vitamin C, or vitamin C. So what are vitamins to go off, and what's molecular tours, and what's everything? So what are vitamins? These are essential chemicals, that's what they are. A vitamin is a chemical. It's generally, amine means it's generally got a nitrogen group, but an amide with it. But this is a vitamin without the minute, without the vitamin in it. And so essentially, it's an essential nutrient that you have, and if you don't eat, you die. In this case, you become a scurvy pirate. I forgot what the symptoms of scurvy are. Fingernails. I can remember something to do with fingernails, yellowing of skin. Essentially, the body runs out of it. So it's sort of like an essential nutrient. And as such, it's got a half-life in it, in that you can eat it, store it, but your store only lasts so many days. You have to have this vitamin. There's vitamin B1, which is beriberi, and vitamin C, which you have scurvy. And it's, I suppose, important for this, the story of Australia, or the story of us, and that's where the British Navy eventually beats scurvy, and was able to actually send long-range expeditions further and further out on the limits, and actually go to Australia. And the real differentiation is that when the French came out with better equipped ships, short time afterwards, they hadn't attended to this, and so their expeditions, or their foothold in the Pacific, was much less due to not understanding this disease. So it's around 750, so Australia was 779, was was it 779 or 769? I really can't remember. 769. When there was the eclipse of Venus. And so in that period, that 20-year period, from working out that it was to do with diet and fresh food, the Royal Navy was equipped and focused on this problem, whereas it wasn't such an obvious problem. So what happens is your crew looks good, and then all of a sudden they start to fall over and die pretty much at the same time. And so back then, long-term voyages was a critical thing. You generally go on with not 50% more crew, a third more crew, and you're saying, oh, it's pretty easy. Why have they over-equipped the ship? Well, it's sort of like a backup, because they expected people to die. So we're going to get into vitamins. So people will have heard of vitamin C. It's famously for colds. And what has been shown is that vitamin C, if you have too much, your kidney breaks it down. So essentially it's like drinking 3 liters of water a day, but your cup you have on the breakfast table is just a small, 300 milliliter cup. And so you pour that 3 liters of water into that cup, it will just simply fall over and wet. And so basically, if you take excessive vitamin C, you basically, give your kidneys, whatever it is, your liver that breaks it down. Bit of exercise, thank you very much. Could be any toxin. It's just broken down and excreted. Okay, now let's get on to what molecular tours are. So molecular tours are where you're given the basic periodic table. In this case, it's only going to be oxygen, carbon, and hydrogen, these atoms. And they have basic rules for which they can stick together. Hydrogen form a single bond. It's got one electron and one proton. And it itself can actually form hydrogen bonds, that is, where there can be electrons on either side, molecules on either side, electrons on either side, and it can, the proton itself, which is incredibly small, much smaller than electrons, can actually zip between and actually form a force field between two chemicals. That's hydrogen. Oxygen. Just to give you a clue in, our model of hydrogen is a smaller white sphere. That's in the model kits, or if you see a picture of a molecule on the internet, it'll be small white. Oxygen has 8 electrons, 8 protons in general, oxygen 16. So oxygen 16 refers to the fact that it's got 8 protons positively charged and 8 neutrons in its central nucleus. And it will have 2 electrons in the inner shell, 6 on the outer, 8 all in all, allowing it to form 2 covalent bonds. That's the major thing with oxygen. Now, this system only works really for that first 2 periods. After that, everything's up to grabs. It's you can kiss goodbye to school physics, and you have to start studying quantum physics a bit. So oxygen can form 2 bonds, 2 covalent bonds. That's sharing bonds. I suppose ionic bonds, if it's, it depends on the relative electronegativity. Electronegativity is quality number. It's actually got no scientific basis. I think fluorine, which is supposed to be the most electronegative, is 1, and something which has got no electronegativity, doesn't pull electrons towards it, has got 0. And so francium's got the minimum electronegativity, and fluorine's got the largest electronegativity, it just means that things with different electronegativity, the electron tends to spend more time over it, over on the atom, which has got a greater, effective positive charge. That can be seen. Now, it's a bit hard to say, why is that so? And again, it's into quantum mechanics. It's the shape of the orbitals and whether the charge, positive charge of the nucleus can be seen. So if you imagine the cloud of the electrons are funny big shapes and they go in and feel like jigsaw puzzle pieces, if they have a exposed nucleus, that nucleus will appear very positively charged. So this is it, that fluorine will appear extremely positively charged, whereas neon, which is right next to it, is really super compact. It's like the most compact, most unreactive element there is. There's neon. It's whether the electron can get into it. So with oxygen likes to pull electrons towards it, likes to pull it across it, and it's also got the advantage of another thing, is that once the electron is pulled across it, that electron can fall even though it's a overall negative charge. There's no reason, no energy. So you have a negative and positive charge, there's energy given off as the two come together. However, you can have a neutral atom and electron, and energy can be given off as the electron comes together, because of the shape of the electrons. That's called electron affinity. These are two separate things. Oxygen's pretty good on both of them, but it's got a limit to how many bonds it can make. So a bond requires two electrons, one from the oxygen itself, and in the trade, one from the atom it's binding with. So, oxygen, O2 can form a double bond, forms a crosser, or H2O can form a single bond with hydrogen, a single bond with hydrogen, or H2O. That's covalent, but it's also a bit electronic, a bit ionic to go across there. So I'm just trying to give you a general view. And carbon, the other thing involved, can form four bonds. So carbon 12, six protons, six neutrons, charge of six in the center. The inner shell's got two, the outer shell's got eight, potential to form, and it does. Four bonds. Now, those four bonds can be in a variety of things. In general, they're pointing at the vertices of tetrahedrons. So if you imagine a microphone at your local school concert, there's three prongs onto the ground to hold it, up to a little knuckle. That knuckle is where the nucleus is, and you've got the other prong going upwards. So that's the way the bonds usually form. However, you can have another thing with it where it's flat, and the electron which was a bond is sort of shared covalently in a pi bond. So there's three types of bonding, but two major types of bonds. That's three-dimensional pyramid bond, or a flat, a flat triangle bond, a bit like a Mercedes-Benz symbol, with the electron splitting above and below, and that electron is called a pi electron. Now, is this the way the numbering is? It's the second. It was just the way that it happened. We just called it a pi electron. So with that, we'll go into the description of it to describe what vitamin C is. And with those building blocks, we'll go forward to explain what's going on. So let's give some other areas of context. So I've given the area of context of vitamin C, what a vitamin is, some history of it, how it's important, sort of a vitamin of conquest, so to speak, but and some story about what a molecular tool is, some of the tools that you need, and why am I doing a molecular tour. Well, one is that I'm doing rehab, and I'm just really pushing myself and hoping I don't fall off the edge. And this is lots of exercise, lots of cognitive stuff. So unknown to many people, but your brain gets really knocked around by operations, so you've got to really, really push it. And unknown to people, life's not fair. Things are written in the books and in policy, yep, they should help you. But indeed, if you're not really if you're not in the zone to be helped, there's this sort of agonizingly slow process of just being left out to swim for yourself. And that's what I'm sort of doing. I'm sort of swimming ashore, and just taking a lot of guts and pressure just to work one small step at a time, one periodic table at a time, one molecule at a time, one skill set at a time, one exercise a group at a time. So that's the process there. But it's not just mad, stupid exercise. So in the exercise of coaching to make sure I'm doing the right stuff, cognitive, I'm doing things like copying out whole sheets of paper at the moment, just to get my hand coordination up, doing programming to make sure that I can write computer programs. So I'm forced to do it. So you've got those three threads going on. One's your thread, which is about atoms. Now, there's a molecule I've done, which is sort of a very likable molecule, and it's adenine. And again, I've just got it in my memory. It's one of the DNA base keys, and adenine, which hooks onto a sugar called ribose. Now, ribose is a very important sugar. It's a 5-carbon sugar, and sugars are made carbohydrates, so they're basically a carbon which used to have an oxygen. That oxygen is replaced with the water. So yes, it's essentially the oxygen's shoot off into the atmosphere. 20% of our atmosphere is now from from carbon dioxide, which has been converted into sugars. It's like that. Ribose is really important, adenine is this base. Now I've got adenine. I'll have to go back in my head to its structure. I can barely see it. I can see the three nitrogens on the base forming this alliance, two nitrogens in the top hexagon of it. We won't go into it now. I can barely remember that, and I can sort of visualize the pi electrons which hold the structure nice and flat. So that's important. So it's a really base important thing. But vitamin C is just ribose with sugar. So adenine is the base, adenosine is the base plus the sugar, and then you add phosphate. So adenosine triphosphate is the energy battery. It's a beautiful thing to see the quantum mechanics of that. So this molecular tour of sorbic acid is called, or vitamin C, is very nice, so to speak. So you start off with your ribose sugar, but basically it's 5 carbons in a teapot shape. That is, we in general we like to count, have a counting system, and so what we'll do for this one is we'll have a pentagon, and the 5 points of the pentagon, the top point of the pentagon will be an oxygen, carbon 2, carbon 3, carbon 4, carbon 5, and in ribose, that carbon is bonded to another carbon, so that gives you 5 carbons and a ring of 5 with an oxygen, so 1 carbon sticking off. And so that ribose has an OH sitting on both of those bottom oxygens, so those bottom carbons. So it's got a lot of OHs on it, and when it's going, that the most of those carbons in that ring, or all the carbons, have an OH on it, which can be traded applied to things. So let's go to sorbic acid or vitamin C at this point in time. So we have a pentagon with sitting on your table, sitting up, if you like to do it. So it's got a base and it's got an apex at the top. A pentagon, it's nice to remember, think of a little roof. At the top of the roof, it's an oxygen truss at the top. Then your first carbon, well, let's start doing sorbic acid seriously. You've got a carbon. That carbon's bonded to an oxygen, another carbon that's got two bonds to go. And in this case, that oxygen is used to be in the ribose sugar, has its hydrogen stripped away, and it bonds with a double bond into the carbon. So your carbon number one is bonded to an oxygen, double bonded to another oxygen, but two bonds, one other bond, that bonds down to a carbon. So that carbon there, number one carbon, is like in the gutter. The carbon number three is on the ground, the floor to the wall carbon number three. Now that one is, depending on the acidic state, the reduction state, that is bounded to a OH. That's an oxygen and a hydrogen. But that hydrogen can be ripped off and that oxygen form a double bond. So that can form, depending on what, whether it's state of acidity, neutralized, that can form a, that is, we'll just leave it at the moment as an OH. It's rather nice to look at it like that. Next carbon, also on the floor, carbon number four, is also bounded to an OH. So, going around, you've got an oxygen at the top, bonded to carbon, which has got a double bond to oxygen, bonded to next carbon, which has got an OH, next carbon an OH. Next carbon here obviously is on the wall, it's on the gutter, connecting the wall, roof section, and that's got four bonds. Now, when you are, when you're writing structural formulas, you leave off hydrogens unless they're ambiguous. Unless you can, benzene, and cyclohexane, they look the same, but the number of hydrogens and the bonding configuration is different. So you have to add in hydrogens to explain what's going on. So we break the rule and put a hydrogen onto the carbon here to say this is bonded to an oxygen, down to another carbon on the floor, to a hydrogen and out, like a chimney. It's like the teapot of the ribose sugar. But this one is not bound to one, but two carbons. That's right, yeah, two carbons. And those two carbons, as we go along, it's pretty simple, are bound to OHs. So that's like every carbon has got dealing with a... in this molecule, it's got an oxygen going on it. And so let's count the carbons. There's six carbons, and count the oxygens. There's 6 oxygens. So it's a fair amount of, it's a fairly oxidized sugar. This most animals can actually synthesize this in their liver or kidney. They get sugar, and they have enzymes which are the sort of like factory machines. You can imagine like a enzymes like a kitchen gadget. Chemical kitchen gadget. It's able to take this simple ribose and just simply add oxygens to it or take off hydrogens. It doesn't seem all that complicated. But humans, not all apes, but humans and another line of apes have lost the ability to synthesize vitamin C. And there's another species which they discovered just by complete accident, and it's guinea pigs. Can't actually make vitamin C, because when they were getting trying to test for vitamin B1 deficiency, they gave guinea pigs a really bad diet, and to their surprise, the guinea pigs actually didn't developed scurvy. So you can imagine their confusion. They were trying to give guinea pigs beriberi, which is a sort of a spotted disease, and you die of it. Beriberi is a vitamin B1 deficiency that if you just eat completely fully processed food, you can possibly get beriberi. Not in a Western, well, in a Western processed diet, you possibly could have it. So I just got the guinea pigs have it, and there's a bit of a story for it. There's also what I find a very fascinating story, because I sort of like to follow the dietary story and the animal story of European exploration, not because I think it's great, because it's very interesting. One of the things which are very great at producing vitamin C, and that's goats. And of course, goats very much feature with Captain Cook, the voyages around the the world. The British secret animal was the goat, and so Captain Cook had a sea goat, which had, this Captain Cook is the person, the British person who, quote unquote, well, he definitely discovered New Zealand, but encountered Australia and found the un-Dutch part of, Captain Cook discovered the un-Dutch part of, or some less, not so Dutch parts of New Holland, which turned out eventually to be, Australia. So here's a goat thing, and then if you just watch the animals, they're various greyhounds and just all these weird animals on these ships, and it was goats. And eventually you think, oh look, I want to track the history of the goats, and you find out that on his second and third voyages he had not one goat but a herd of goats on his ship, and he was very protective of his goats, and that's a very interesting aspect of it. And of course, goat's milk is and human breast milk is a source of vitamin C. Of course, it would have to be vitamin C, because it's an essential vitamin. So human breast milk has to have the complete set of vitamins to sustain your baby's life. You don't sort of, you don't have to have these various things. So that's that story, and that's the molecular tour. And what will happen is I'll go back. I want to do some various vitamins and the various bases and the various drugs. They're all very similar chemicals, that it's nice to talk about a hexagon or a pentagon. If you have these very long molecules that are connected like a really complicated house, there's a whole wing off this way and a wing off that way, you can it's difficult to actually discuss it, but this is more like a small yurt or something like that with a side room in it, so it's all in a ring. You can discuss it, and then and there's just a little annex there of the terex carbons, and it's a fairly nice molecule to look at, especially in three dimensions if you look at it in JMOL. Thanks a lot for listening. podcast, another story comes to a close. It's been a pleasure sharing this moment in time with you. May you discover truly amazing things, understand them, and tell others. Thanks for listening.